Thanks for inviting me. I'm glad to be here today. I'm going to start with a few introductory slides on antibiotic resistance in agroecosystems and then move into our work on antibiotic resistant indicators in runoff. And let's get started. Oh, I'm trying something new. I'm incorporating acknowledgments into the body of the presentation. So you'll see who did what as that gets described. And it's so dark, I can't see where to press to move the slide forward. Got it. Got it. Page down. Okay. The issue of antibiotic resistance in agroecosystems is one that's captured national attention, with the primary concern being the transfer of resistance from animals to humans via food, soil, and the environment. The public perception of this problem and the policymaker, to some degree, perception of this problem has only these two parts. And so it's easy to see why most of the popular discussion is focused on the drugs. But we're here today because we know there's all of this going on between the farm and the clinic. And in fact, this is a slightly over-optimistic view of what we already know. In reality, there's still a lot of missing pieces. So today, I'll be looking at a small portion of one of those pieces and sharing my work with you. This project started, as all my projects do, with manure. Animal manure is how antibiotic-resistant bacteria and genes enter the environment. Manure is really the key to understanding antibiotic resistance in agroecosystems, regardless of whether you go from manure down the food safety track or down the environmental quality track. It all starts with manure. The runoff studies that we're doing were designed and executed by Dr. John Gilley with the Agricultural Research Service in Lincoln, Nebraska, and you can see in the background here some of the rainfall simulator machines that we use as part of this study. Here's a closer view of that with two plots. The experiments I'll describe today use 12 plots collected in triplicate. The water came from irrigation well and followed some standardized procedures for doing these rainfall simulation experiments. The manure that was used in these studies, Dr. Brian Woodbury and Dr. David Parker, who were at the Meat Animal Research Center in Clay Center, Nebraska, coordinated and tracked the feeding of the drugs to the animals and the collection of the manure. Microbiology was done in my lab. We used genotypic and phenotypic methods, but for this study, just phenotypic methods. We counted the bacteria that were plated on different microbiological media. And when I say we counted, those blue hands belong to the woman in the corner, Jennifer McGee. She's the one who actually plated the bacteria on this spiral plating machine that's pictured here and actually counted the bacteria. When we talk about antibiotic resistance, people talk about it as if it's one thing, but really it's a lot of different things with a lot of different definitions. And I would like to advocate that we as a community start to be more descriptive about what we are specifically talking about when we say antibiotic resistance. And so in that spirit, here are my definitions for this particular study. As far as fecal bacteria goes, I was counting anything that grew on a McConkie plate. When it comes to tetracycline resistance, anything that grew on that McConkie plate with this concentration of tetracycline. I picked this concentration because it's used by the Clinical Laboratory Standards Institute standard protocols for clinical isolates. There are not standards that are developed for agricultural and environmental isolates, so we use the clinical standards, and it's a starting place. So we come to my data, and now the specific details of the results that I get with my data are fascinating and very interesting to me, probably of less interest to you. I'm going to be breezing over somewhat some of the specifics and using some of my results to highlight some of the issues, methodological issues, that I think we as a community need to be thinking about and addressing as we move forward asking these kinds of questions. So here's the result of the counts, and the column on your left is manure. In blue are the counts on the plain plates. In red are the counts on the tetracycline plates. So basically all of the bacteria that we were getting were resistant to tetracycline in the source manure. In contrast this to the soil, this is soil that was collected before the manure was applied to the plots. We have overall lower numbers of fecal bacteria, which is what we would expect. And also you'll notice proportionately a smaller number of bacteria that were resistant to tetracycline. And then our runoff results. So the issue that this data slide highlights is it's important to measure baseline resistance so that we know what is there to start with and what's a result of our experimental treatment. Just going in blind and saying, oh, we found tetracycline resistance there, at this point that's of limited utility. We need to start adding additional information in order to be able to start to tease out what's functionally happening in these systems. The data that we collected, we collected in triplicate as a function of the applied field nature of these studies. Our replicates were collected on consecutive days. So here's the data looking at broken out by the day of collection. There's a slight anecdotal decline in the overall numbers, and we notice no real difference as far as proportion goes during the 3 days. So the tetracycline-resistant bacteria seem to be behaving in this particular instance the same way as the other bacteria. The issue here that this highlights is resistant bacteria in the environment are dynamic. Measuring the bacteria is different than measuring the nutrients. We can't just do a mass balance approach, one in, one out. That's not necessarily the case for the bacteria. They can grow and they can die. How do we then best measure that? What's the best technique to capture the dynamic nature of things? And what's going to be the most appropriate way to think about quantify resistant bacteria and resistance genes? We can't just use the model that the nutrient people use. We characterized isolates, E. coli isolates, for resistance to 12 antibiotics. And it's using CLSI standards. That N is not supposed to be here. We're not a TV show, not yet. Looking at the number of resistances per isolate, the question here, methodological question covering in this slide is, how does the media that you use impact the number and types of resistances that you see? So if I'm picking isolates off of the McConkie plates, the plain plates, and the TET plates, am I seeing different types of resistance? Does it skew it one way or the other? Going in, when we started these kinds of experiments a few years back, I would have put money on, oh, we see more resistance on the isolates that come off of the tetracycline plate. They're already resistant to one. We know for sure. So here you hear me using this language that I don't like, more resistant. Well, what does that mean? How do you define more resistant? So I'm going to try to use the mouse here. And I can see what Dr. Top was saying. It's not really, oh, there we go. So here, number of resistances. Resistant to three of the 12 antibiotics that we tested. Or resistant to four of the antibiotics that we tested. There's a larger number of isolates that got pulled off of the tetracycline plate that are resistant to three or four antibiotics. When you go down up towards higher number of resistances, that proportion changes. We see more on MAC. We see this pattern, or we've seen it. I don't know what you guys have seen if you've done these kinds of things. Inevitably, the one with the highest number of resistances is usually off of the plain MAC plate. So in the end answer, which is more resistant, it's kind of a wash and depends on how you define more resistance. That's at least what we're seeing from the systems that we're working in. Oh, you didn't see that yet? The lead into that next slide is, so there's some samples with one resistance. There's some samples with three resistances. And it's a natural tendency. Oh my, three resistances, it's multi-drug resistant. That must be worse. than the one resistant. It must be more dangerous. It's natural to think that. But we have to go beyond that and look at not only how many are they resistant to, but what are they resistant to? If they're resistant to three antibiotics that aren't really used to treat animal or human diseases, then that might not be as bad as something that only has one resistance, but it's resistant to a drug that we use or that could impact clinical treatments. So that brings us to which drugs were the E. coli resistant to. Here's the data from my study. Runoff and manure numbers. The high end is highlighted here in red and the low end in blue. Some of the low ends like gentamicin, E. coli is intrinsically resistant to, so we kind of expect these results. And I already talked about this point. It's not only how many resistances, but what kind of resistance that determine the ultimate risk to animal health or human health when we start to talk about antibiotic resistance in agroecosystems. Oh, and now we've made it to the bacitracin resistance slide, which is going to be quick. We found no bacitracin resistance in any of the manure runoff or soil samples that we tested. So bacitracin is kind of tricky to work with. You have to make up the plates within 24 hours of using them. It degrades. And I'd like to highlight here the decisions that have to be made. As I, I'm talking to myself, but it's coming out of my mouth. Okay. So the decisions that have to be made about how do we define resistance. So I go to the literature and there's a wide variety of parameters that have been used in the past for calling something resistant. I chose number 3 here highlighted in yellow. So using that parameter, I found no bacitracin resistance. If I had picked a different way to define bacitracin resistance, I might have found resistance. And that's something that we need to be thinking about and asking questions about when we look at studies that are being done. So here's the close. You might have had a vision that something like this was coming. This is a math cartoon. Complicated math on the left, complicated math on the right, then a miracle occurs in the middle. This is what we are at essentially when understanding the impact of agricultural, veterinary antibiotic use in food animals and how it impacts human health. And the one mathematician is telling the other, I think you should be more explicit here in step 2. This is going to sound a little cheesy, but I'm going to say it anyway. The miracle, it's manure. Yeah, and in fact, in the rest of the talks during this session, we're going to be learning a little bit about what's going on here in step 2. So with that, thank you for your attention. Yeah, we definitely see different numbers. She was asking about plating on different media and injured cells. We, in this instance, specifically are trying to pull out the fecal bacteria, so I'll take the loss of the injured cells in order to be able to focus just on the feces specifically. Tetracycline resistance especially is very common in the environment. I wanted to sort out just the manure part of it. But we have done studies where we'll plate on other media, on soil media, and we do get different counts. So that is also something to consider as you look at the results. There's no one good way to get everything.
Thank you very much.